This podcast is for informational purposes only. We are not medical professionals and do not provide medical advice. Consult a healthcare provider for any health concerns. Opinions expressed are not a substitute for professional medical guidance.
This edition of the Optimize We podcast is brought to you by The DNA Company. Visit thednacompany.com and use code WE10, that's W-E-1-0, for 10% off your purchase. Again, thednacompany.com and use code WE10. Hello and welcome to the Optimize We podcast, where we share biohacking truths and no BS. I'm your host, Lindsay O'Neill, and today I am joined by two new friends in the industry, Miss Tracy Wood, who is the CEO of the DNA Company, and Dr. Krista Kosterman, who is the chief scientist working with Tracy on ensuring that all of the amazing things that the DNA Company is doing are at the highest effectiveness, the highest efficiency, and efficaciousness. So welcome, ladies, to the show.
It's a pleasure to be here. We're excited to be here, Lindsay. We've heard a ton of stuff about your work, and I've watched some of your stuff, and it's fantastic.
So as you ladies probably know, I am a huge data nerd. I gave a TEDx on bioindividual data and how it can transform the future of your health. I spoke on stage at Gaia talking about my own personal health story when I got hit by a car when I was pregnant with my third daughter and how that led me down this data-driven journey to understand my bioindividual needs and then also hers when she started to experience a lot of issues. And one thing that I found throughout all of my research and all of my journey is that there are certain things that are ingrained into my DNA that can be triggered, can be activated, right, by these, whether it's a traumatic experience or whether it's an environmental issue or whatever it is, when those things are triggered, I have a much harder time dealing with that than any sort of like lifestyle thing that might be going on. Like it's very easy to change my diet and my lifestyle. For many people, it's not. But like, tell me a little bit more about the DNA Company and how genetics can help us, understanding our genetics and our bioindividuality can help us optimize our health.
I think understanding the blueprint of who you are, namely the genes that form, create, and found who you are, can be a very helpful and directive thing when it comes to your health. So let me offer an example of this. So for example, I see a lot of people come in with mood disorders. Maybe they really struggle with stress or anxiety or depression. And traditionally, this was something seen as, well, you're just not mentally robust enough. Shame on you for not being positive. Shame on you for this. And a lot of people internalized that, right? And then we went through a little bit of a psychiatric revolution, a little bit of a psychology revolution. And, you know, come the 50s, 60s, 70s, we started to appreciate, well, there's probably something going on in the brain there. Come the 90s, the 2000s, we started to say, oh, maybe it's the biome or the diet, right? We started to learn that there was a lot more involved in this. And part of what we saw in the 90s and the 2000s was also an awareness that genes play an incredible role. And at first, we really went down rabbit holes of, let's find genes that are very specific to diseases, right? So let's find this one gene that will say, this is why you have depression. And to date, you know, we found a few genes that are absolutely associated and can really increase risk, but we haven't found that proverbial smoking gun. Okay, so people are kind of sitting there and they're like, I know all this stuff plays into it. There's a little bit of mindset, there's diet, there's lifestyle, there's all the things, right? But they still want to understand what are those propensities. And I think this is where genetics, especially functional genetics, comes into the picture because it offers a lot of basis with which we can understand our own tendencies and then really take some of that blame away. Okay, so for example, we look at several genes that will curate how do you respond to stress in the moment, and then how do you recover from it after the fact? right? And both of those will play into, in that moment, how do you respond? Are you more likely to get those anxious, traumatic, or depressive tendencies? But after that fact, right, how much are you to internalize those so those become more a part of your makeup? Right. Once people understand that, once they hear that, my body has a tendency towards this, my body has a tendency towards internalizing that trauma and making it part of me, right? Then they're like, okay, so it's not my fault. It's not me. It's just something in my genes. Cool. Now that we know that, what specifically can I do to avoid that? Right. So if I have a tendency when something traumatic happens, for example, we look at a gene called ADRA2B. Right. We're looking effectively. It's called an indel. We're looking at how much information do you have there. The more information you have, the better you're set up for dealing with some of that stress in the moment, because you're not as sensitive to some of the biochemical messengers. The less information you have there, right, the more sensitive you are to that. And that will also predispose you towards embedding that memory a lot more and therefore being triggered in the future.
So, Dr. Krista, I am very eager to learn more about you too, because you're a beautiful young lady who's very well spoken and seems to care deeply about everybody that you work with. How did you get into doing all of this?
I was initially trained in computer science. I then got into a space of organizational management through the IT, through tech lens. But then when I got bored with it, for lack of better phrasing, you know, I got more enamored by the best computer on the planet, which is the human body. And I think that's where it found me right now, where I get to combine all of these different things, where I get to combine technology with an awareness of genetics, which is the foundational coding and blueprint of the body, with a lens of preventative medicine. From the beginning, I never wanted to be a doctor who was reactive, who, you know, someone come in and said, hey, my arm's cut off. You have to react to that, right? I would rather get ahead of that. How do we prevent your arm from getting cut off? How do we give you health to the end of you're not in a situation where you're trying to react to it, right?
If you think about my family, all of the women in my family have been on some sort of SSRI, antidepressant, anti-anxiety medication, including myself.
Yeah.
And I always joke with my food inflammation clients, because I'm a Harvard certified culinary medicine chef, and that's what I've done for several years, is kind of like taking, here are the foods that are triggering inflammation for you. Here's your bio-individual meal plan, yada, yada, yada. But I never thought of it from a mental health perspective. And in the middle of the pandemic, I was actually working for a company that was a collaborative care mental health practice. And they looked at things like the gut microbiome, and they looked at genetics. They looked at, you know, what had happened to you in, you know, in your health journey, not just your emotional journey.
Yeah.
But when you think about like, oh, well, I'm just genetically like overweight. All the people in my family are genetically overweight, right? If we can shift that from blaming ourselves,
yes,
like you're saying, right, kind of blaming our parents,
right? I totally support that. I think that that's a very healthy thing to do. My parents are on the hook for every horrible thing I ever did. But I think one of the things that we do that's really markedly different in our space is we do start with that foundation of who you are.
Yeah.
You know, we get people that come to us. When I joined the team back in 2022, I created the clinic model that we have now. We see thousands of patients. We have people that come in for different chronic conditions, people that are on SSRIs that don't necessarily want to stay using something that there's no efficacy for. So as we expanded the business, we took our core product, which was that DNA 360, which did tell us how people would express, how they do show up in life. Yeah. But then we added a pharmacogenomics panel to that. Mm-hmm. And with the pharmacogenomics panel, we can tell you genetically what medication you simply cannot take. You know, 1.3 million medical mistakes, avoidable medical mistakes, are made in ERs and EDs every single year in the United States. 7,000 of those people die. Had they have had, in many of those cases, up to 80% of those cases, a PGX report, those avoidable medical mistakes would not have been made. And a portion of that 7,000 wouldn't be here. So it does come down to data. It comes down to having those factual data points that you can look at and say, okay, for you chemically, Lindsay, this is more likely than not to be your reality. And that was really what our goal was when we added additional testing and really expanded the business.
And thinking about words as prayers and energy too, when you take the pressure off of this blame or shame, you know, shame and blame have the lowest vibration of any emotion. That's been proven clinically. There's people that I've met that have all these writings on like the inside of their water bottle, like, you are beautiful, you are worthy. Mm. And that energy from those words gets infused into that water and it somehow makes them feel better. Right. So you're taking the pressure off because you're finding something else to blame, essentially. But is the reverse also true? Like, once you give someone a diagnosis, and especially a genetic diagnosis, does it cause them to say, oh, well, crap, I should be depressed?
So one thing that's important to note is we don't hand out a diagnosis for anything per se. What we will say to them is, based on your genes, we believe these things to resonate with you. Does any of that align with you? Do you think, oh yeah, you know what? I do wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning because I'm still angry about something that happened yesterday afternoon. Is that something that plays in the back of your subconscious? And will it spark that within your brain? Right. Then conversely, there are people that are going to take, if you say to them, you know, genetically, you'll struggle if you eat carbs, because we can tell you that. We can tell you if you can convert and use that fuel. And then, well, that's the reason that I'm so overweight. Well, no, it's not necessarily the reason. It could be contributory,
right?
But it's certainly not foundationally how you got here. Let's find how you got here. Let's use all of this information, all of this data, and build a support for you clinically and a roadmap for you to come out of that. Doctor, do you want to add to that at all?
I do. And I have a patient story, actually, that beautifully illustrates this, right? Because I think the mantra, at least within my practice and within the company, is that genes don't have to be destiny, right? Mm. There's very few genes that are truly deterministic, and they tend to be more pediatric. You'll see that bubble up when you're a child. Once you get past that, there's a few. But by and large, there's a lot with diet and lifestyle that you can be doing. And here's a beautiful example of that. Once upon a time, before I meet with any client, I look over their genes and I try to anticipate what they're going to be coming in for. Because by and large, you can predict it, right? If you see a cluster of poor genes, you're like, okay, cool, this person's coming in for cardiovascular, maybe hormone support. So I reviewed this woman's report and she was a hot mess when it came to any of her mood and behavior genes. You know, and a hot mess meaning she wouldn't have been focused, probably anxious and or depressed, and probably likely ridden with some substance abuse issues, right? Mm-hmm. And so I was readying for that sort of consult because those are difficult to give, you know, with clients like that. They're difficult to communicate with. This woman comes in, she was together, she was very focused, very kind, very upbeat. And her concern that she had was completely removed from moon behavior, nothing to do with it. I go through this hour consult, and at the very end, because she hadn't raised it, I gently dig in because I wanted to know, did I have the right report? Like, could the lab have made a mistake? And what she told me, and I thought this is so powerful. So she has several brothers and sisters. They were all raised by a mother who happened to be a psychotherapist. So they were raised with a lot of mental health tools. And her comment to me was, I have to work so hard at this. I dedicate an hour every day to my mental health practices. My brother and sister don't. And 80% of the time I have great mental health. But, you know, there's that sometimes where the proverbial ish hits the fan and then everything explodes. And she, the way she articulated, she was 100% like her genome. So I think she's this beautiful, powerful example of, you can have genes that say you're going to be struggling, and if you're not doing anything, you're going to be in a bad way. But she was this beautiful example, thanks to mama. We don't always get to blame our parents, ladies. But thanks to mama, mama equipped her with tools unknowingly, right? Mom didn't know her genome, but equipped her with tools to avoid the negative outcomes. And she tends to be one of the people I really raise forward of, your genes are not fatalistic. You have a lot of power and control.
you might have to put a little bit more work and energy and TLC into it, but you're not bound to them, right? I think that's really important for people to hear.
I've heard that adage a million times that your genes load the gun and it's your diet and lifestyle that pull the trigger, right?
Yeah.
So I've heard that over and over again. And actually, even in my own genetic discovery into what the heck is going on with Lindsay O'Neill, especially after the trauma really activated whatever genetic predispositions I had. So I'll give you my example. So I learned all about the MTHFR mutations, right? Yeah. I've got two copies of A1298C and one copy of C677T. And when I first learned this, I looked at my doctor like he was speaking Japanese and, you know, says, what the heck does any of this mean? And what he said to me was, so it can mean nothing, or it could mean that all of your autoimmune issues, your inability to like process foods, to methylate your own hormones, to detoxify your body, all of those things could also be related to this genetic predisposition to higher levels of toxicity, to an imbalance in my hormones, higher levels of like heavy metals and that kind of thing in my blood, which can wreak havoc on not just your gut, but also your immune system. And all of my hair fell out. I was hospitalized multiple times for crushing chest pain. And just having a better understanding of my bio-individual data was really helpful. And I did grow up with an amazing mother who I never blamed for anything. But she was a clinician that also has a beautiful relationship with God and is a very spiritual woman. And so there's a lot that goes into designing a human, right? From a DNA perspective. And that this magical being that God has created is beautifully and wonderfully made doesn't mean that because I'm pulling the trigger with all of my diet and lifestyle choices that I'm perfect. I'm perfectly imperfect. And so having a better understanding of where I am is something that, and having faith that anything is possible in terms of miracles and healing, that all came from my mama.
She set you up for success, right?
She did. And it sounds like information is power in a lot of these cases, and a lot of the people that you're working with, that you're talking to. One thing that I really love about what you guys are doing is that you're protecting our data. I don't know if you've read the news lately. There's lots of data leakage going on. There are some companies, competitors of yours that are going out of business because of all of these issues. Yeah. I always loved getting those emails saying, oh, you've got 12 cousins in the Bronx. I'm like, well, how the heck do they know that? And do I really want to meet these people? Or are they all just going to want to come over for Christmas dinner and eat me out of house and home?
Right.
Or want my kidney for, you know, some transplant or something. How do you guys manage all of the data and the efficacy around keeping it safe and private?
So, you know, we use tertiary redundancy in our server environments, right? We bank everything with AWS, which is a great server system, very secure. But we have internal protocols as well, where we utilize our own strategies to make sure that those IP addresses are protected. I mean, everybody knows 23andMe is in I think they're in Chapter 11 reorganization. In fact, we were actually speaking to some of the attorneys relative to that. And one of the things that we found that was very interesting was the main asset they have is everybody's data. They have 15 million people's information. And, you know, there's biobanks all over the world. And those biobanks spend a lot of money. And we've been approached time and again. We have tens of thousands of patients in our system. We're not selling the data. We're not sharing the data. We're not parting with the data. You know, we have people that emailed us after everything happened with 23andMe. I think we got 10 emails the very first day. I want my data deleted. No problem. Done. Mm-hmm. Just done. Now your file is gone. You can never access it again. We can never access it again. You have to be retested in order for us to produce that information. And I think a lot of people were very shocked. We actually had somebody come back and say, listen, I read your data policy. Go ahead and retrieve my data. We said, sorry, you have to retest. And while they found that a bit frustrating, in my opinion, you cannot have it both ways. If you want your data protected and us to stand guard on that, we're willing to do that. But if you say to us, listen, we don't have faith that it's going to be guarded well enough, go ahead and pull it. We respect your right to do that. And it's done literally within minutes of the written request. And, you know, 23andMe didn't do that. When they started deleting data, because it was all over the news 2 mornings in a row, here's how you step-by-step delete your data. They stopped that being allowed within 48 hours.
Wow.
So, you know, there's a lot of concern around that. It's like you said, data, I mean, data is king. Right? We know every time we walk into a store, our phone, that data is automatically being loaded. We know every time we buy something, all of that's being tagged to us as we go through our life. That's why in our feed, it's all about the things that we're looking for, or even things that we've said in the last 10 minutes. That's disturbing in a lot of ways. I mean, it is. And it's important that you do know who has your information, and especially when it comes to your health.
Right.
Your medical information, your clinical information, that should be private between you and whoever your practitioners are.
Yeah. When I first got into the digital advertising industry, it was early 2001. It was later 2001. It was right after 9/11 had happened. Mm. And the first job I had in the digital advertising industry was to manually process in an Excel spreadsheet opt-out leads. These were, people didn't even know. They would sign up for like Evite or whatever website was out there at the time.
Yeah.
And there were all these checkboxes below the fold that said, by signing up for this one company, you're signing up for 500 other companies.
Right.
And we were reselling data like crazy. I won't tell you who I was working for at the time, but this is before the CAM Spam Compliance Act of 2002.
Right.
Then fast forward a few years in my career, I built with a team the largest data management platform, like one of the first data management platforms.
Wow. And
what we did is we used AWS also. We used Crosswalk IDs to de-identify any personally identifiable information. Mm-hmm. And then we stored all of their behavior data, so what ads, what content they've engaged with on the web in 456 different contextual categories. And then we also matched that up with back-end demographic profile data. So we were able to tell you with specific accuracy, and this data set started to grow over time, right? It originally started with, we know this cookied user online is a female between the ages of 35 and 40 or 35 and 39, who has two kids, who lives in this zip plus four area, who's engaged with mommy content, yada, yada, yada. Mm. And then we were able to very intuitively serve ads to those people. Now, the whole concept behind this was people want to get advertisement that's more personalized to them, right? So if you're a single mom like me, like I was for the last couple of years, I don't want to see all these ads for happy couples gallivanting off. You know, I also don't have penis, so I don't really care about erectile dysfunction. So I don't want to get ED ads, you know, when I'm watching my favorite Netflix binge session.
That's funny.
So the industry has evolved, and I actually was one of the first marketers for Ancestry.com and one of the first people to do the Ancestry genetic test. Because I am a data nerd, I want to have this information. And you're right, Tracy, you can't have it both ways. Mm-hmm. You can't have your data out there being used for your benefit. Now, some people will say, like, is it really used for your benefit? Because the next iteration of what I did in my career and the company that I was an executive at that went public was like, okay, you have this little lipstick, you look at this online, you don't purchase it. So I'm going to follow you around the internet with an ad for this lipstick until you actually purchase this.
Right.
That's when we started to use more of that individual data, like the actual specific products we would custom create in milliseconds, an ad that was specific to what I had not purchased yet. Yeah. And it would still use other data as well.
Yeah.
That was all to optimize advertising, to make more money for the advertisers, to sell more products, and to also potentially provide a better advertising experience for the consumer.
We
think about health optimization and the strategies around the utilization of data. You know, it's not so black and white, right? It's not like someone's just going to do a DNA test. They're going to provide you with their actual data, right? The blueprint of their physical body.
Right.
And then they're going to work with your team to roadmap out how to optimize their health, right?
Right.
Now, how do you take this information? Like, my business mind is going crazy right now. Like, how do you take this information and build a long-term business out of it?
Mm. So, you know, the first thing we had to do was not just stop it at the flagship product. The flagship product has continued to evolve since 2016. When I got here in 2022, I said, we're one and done. How can we have really any clinical efficacy being one and done? Mm. So somebody comes in, they get their blueprint, they go into, maybe they do a coaching program, they spend two or three visits with a practitioner. Practitioner and them say, listen, here's an area you can work on. Here's some great tools. Here's some additional information. Here's resources. Go with God. And the patient then goes and takes all of that and tries to make meaningful change. Well, depending on how the patient functions and things that happen in life, things that are environmental, all of that makes it so the patient has to have additional support ongoing. So then we created the idea behind the DNA Digest, DNA Talks, and that was to propagate as much science-based free information, putting people into webinars, letting people come in and ask questions in real time. You know, it's not like these webinars where they no one gets to answer them. They don't get to engage. So I was really focused on that, along with expanding the testing, right? We expanded into gut microbiome. We expanded into pharmacogenomics. We expanded into liquid biopsy. You know, we have multiple tests that we have championed and worked with different people to put through to test for. You know, 70% of all cancers in America have no test. So we wanted to help be a part of that solution. So building that.
Is that really, that's the liquid biopsy?
That's liquid biopsy. Yeah. Yeah.
That's really cool. I was reading about that on the website, and that's something I would love to dive into more, because that's a perfect example of diet and lifestyle pulling the trigger.
Yes.
Because right. Most cancers, if not almost all cancer, is avoidable. And we talk so much about pre-care and avoiding, you know, the big C word of cancer, because it's scary. It's scary for everybody.
Absolutely.
And so if you can have better diagnostics around that,
I hold an opinion that within the next 10 years, cancer is going to be seen as something of, oh, I got it, I'll quickly treat it, and it's not going to be the big hubbub that it is. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason I say that is because we're now creating the technology to detect it earlier, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Historically, cancer was something that needed to either be symptomatic, i.e. like a cough brought you in, and then you found something in your lungs. Or maybe based on routine screening of maybe breast, you found a lump. But both of those instances, you had to have something pretty big, space occupying, that was disrupting function in the body.
Right.
Whereas now with technologies like Liquid B, we're straight up taking an itty bitty bit of blood. We're looking for DNA and we're saying, hey, do we see anything that looks like cancer? And we're now starting to catch cancers in stages that, I'll be plain, a lot of oncologists are like, we never see it this early. We're not really sure what to do at this point in time. And we're developing technologies to figure out what to do about it, right? But how powerful is it to catch cancer when it's in those formative stages, when it's much more
containable and to a degree manageable by the immune system if you implement proper technology and proper surveying, right? You're stopping it from progressing. If you're able to implement various treatments, be that immunotherapy, be that diet and lifestyle, alongside be a lot more regimented around screening so that heaven forbid it ever get to a point where it does need conventional intervention, right? Then you can jump in that way, right? Yeah. How powerful is that?
And you can do this from your home, too.
Yeah.
And it's not going to break your bank. I think a lot of people think, well, all of this diagnostics and, you know, preventative care measures, biohacking in general, they see these big, cool technologies. They right. see like yeah. millions of tests that are out there. And, oh, well, I can never afford this. And this is for the rich and the famous. How can right. I possibly, you know, do this in the comfort of my own home? Mm. Do you guys also take like FSA cards, HSA cards?
And PGX is often reimbursable through your healthcare provider. And of course, when you do spend a certain amount of money on your health and wellness, you do have the tax benefit that's still on the books today. It's a certain, I think it's 7.5% of your adjusted gross income. If you spend more than that, some of that does come back in the way of a deduction for your taxes.
And that's something that's really interesting to think about. Like, yeah. The sicker you are, the more you're paying for it. But if you can prevent yourself, why worry about a 7.5% tax write-off when you could actually live your life fully, right? You've been given this God-given life, and it's a magical life. You get one in this mm-hmm. particular lifetime, right? How are you going to live it? Many of these biohacker guys, like, look at Brian Johnson, right? Homie wants to live forever. He's spending $2 million a year to not even really live his life.
Yeah.
Not really even living. He's waking up, he's meal prepping and exercising and avoiding the sun. And mm-hmm. that doesn't seem like living to me.
Right.
I think you're tapping on something really, really important. I think often when we see clients, the first question we have to ask is like, what are you trying to optimize your health towards? Because some people truly do, and maybe this is him, right? Truly do get off and enjoy just that precision and that biohacking and can I beat the numbers and odds? And if that's what you're chasing, like, go for it. Right. But most people, that's not their why, right? Like, some people, I think to your point, it's avoid the painful outcome of cancer. But for others, it's, you know, I want to play with my grandchildren when I'm 80. I want to know that my knees are still going to work. There's a lot more functional goals. And I think oftentimes tethering to a vision like that, right, where it's not necessarily let's avoid pain or let my life just be something where I'm optimizing towards health, but instead, you know, I want to travel when I'm 80. I want to be on the floor of my grandkids when I'm 80. That's where the power and the juice sits. Like, it's cool. For some, the engineers often of the world, it's fun and exciting just to chase health. But I mean, for most people, you want to find that why.
Two questions for each of you. So the first question is, what is your why? Why are you doing this? And then also, what are you most excited about with the DNA company?
Before I did what I do now, I was in technology. I worked for, back then it was General Telephones, now Verizon. I worked for AT&T, MCI, Sprint. Anyone with really three letters in their name and a phone company, that's where I started, right? And I loved what I did, but we started having kids late in life. I was 36 when my oldest was born. And I wanted more balance, right? Kind of speaking to what you're saying, I wanted to be able to enjoy my life, enjoy my daughter. And so I went and I got a broker's license and I started to balance those two things. And then in the middle of all of that, I had the second baby. And in the middle of that, my oldest was diagnosed with a form of leukemia. And it was terrifying. Her platelets became non-detectable at one point, and she was bleeding from essentially everywhere. So that kind of drove me to say, okay, one, I need to be home. I need to be with my children. I need to be actively raising our kids. And I need to be a part of whatever length of life my child is getting. And she did great. Amen. She did great. She's fantastic. She's going off to medical school right now. So all of that went well. Well, 3 years after that, my eldest sister died. And she was only 45 years old. And wow. Jackie was schizophrenic. But none of us knew. None of us had any idea before her death that she was schizophrenic. And she died of a drug overdose. And the drugs turned out to be all prescription, prescribed by a practitioner in a national healthcare provider network.
Yeah.
And I was gutted, right? I mean, our whole family was. And it became, at that point for me, a quest to figure out the why. Why were people dying of drug overdoses? And it came down to things like pharmacogenomics, medical mistakes. But PGX wasn't even used until 2018. So I spent, from the time that Jackie died, all of these years building what I could relative to affordable, accessible healthcare with informed consent, agency, and advocacy. And that was really what put me on the radar, I think, for Kashif, who was at that time the CEO and one of the co-founders of DNA Company. And he came and he said, I want to create the clinic model that you've built in the US, and I want to expand what we do, and I need your help to do that. And that's really what brought me here. And he said, Tracy, our test could have saved your sister's life.
Wow.
So that is my why.
Kash Khan, if you follow him on Instagram, I mean, he is one of my inspirations for sharing biohacking truths with no BS. I say this to my fiance often. I'm like, I don't know how this man's still alive. He called out everybody.
Yeah.
If you're going to do a deep dive into the real truth about your health and really get real about optimizing your health, you want to do it with someone like that. And
right.
Obviously someone like you, Tracy, who has a very powerful dual trauma, why, pain that has driven you into this purpose now. And when I originally spoke to Kash, who's a friend of mine, last year, and he told me all about you, I could not wait to meet you. You're also really fun and a great CEO from what I hear.
Thank you. Yeah, I honestly had no intentions on doing the CEO role. But like you said, Kash likes to go out there and pick a fight. And he does it exceedingly well. And I said to him, at some point, honey, we're gonna get sued. And he says, then how about we put you in that seat? Because you know how to do all of that. And I'm just going to go and talk to people. And it works, right? We still do all of Kash's testing, and we handle all of his provider stuff. And it's a great collaboration. He's still very much involved with our goals and our directions. And I mean, Kashif doesn't have a formal education. This is all self-taught. So you have to look at that and say, you know what? Kudos to him, right? Taking all of that time, doing all of that work. And I think he can hold his own with the best of them in our space.
And so what are you most excited about? You know, you've obviously taken over an amazing company. You've created a community within the company now. You've expanded upon the lab testing and the diagnostics and preventative treatments and coaching. So you've done all of these things since you joined the company less than 3 years ago.
Right.
Which is a huge lift. You took it over from an amazing man who's still doing amazing things and still
1,000%
poking the bear wherever he can.
Yeah.
What are you most excited about for DNA Company?
So I think, you know, I'm still going to drive that bus of test, don't guess, right? If you want to know what's happening, let's get some data. Let's make sure all those data points line up. And then let's find what that means to you and then what you want your outcome to be. To me, it's really important to expand. And in fact, we just opened our first actual location in Puerto Rico. And during that, we then got 4 more locations in the Caribbean. So I think that for me, it really is about getting more people into our community and giving them as much information as we can and continuing. I mean, Dr. Kosterman just added 25 more genes or something to what we are reporting. We've got your raw data and we add 20 more genes. We can propagate that down into your existing report and you get all those new insights for life. And that was important to me, right? Because this is science. It's medicine. We call it practicing medicine because nobody's gotten it down right, right? So for us to continue to do that study, for Dr. Kosterman to continue to develop that information and then sharing it without people having to spend a lot more money, that was important to me. I wanted everyone to be able to afford it.
Well, I think that by expanding and creating access for people to transformational insights into their, you know, genetic makeup, you're not really seeking world domination. Although that is a funny clip that hopefully we use in the marketing of the podcast. What you're really looking for is transformation.
Yeah. I want people to be able to afford it, and I want them to be able to get it. There's no reason that somebody can't just have a saliva sample sent from the UK to a lab that gives them great information that could change their life,
right,
change their longevity. If people want to live to be 120, you've got to know what you've got. You have to know where you're starting before you can figure out how in the world you're going to end.
Right. You know, when I was first diagnosed with lupus, which is the dual autoimmune condition, in 2017, the first thing my doctor said was, you need a vacation. And I have got three little babies. I am working my behind off. There's no chance in hell I could take a vacation. So I took a 4-day trip to Costa Rica. And in those 4 days, you know what I did? I went into the forest. I bathed in the ocean. I had monkeys throwing crap at me from, you know, from the pool top.
Yeah.
I ate food from the earth.
Yeah, nice.
And it was such an amazing experience. Now, you're opening these centers. These are treatment centers?
Absolutely. They're wellness centers in these locations. They use all of our testing. They all have medical staff and personnel, and they have a ton of biohacking tools. So they've got the machines and BrainTap and beamers and all of that. These are centers for excellence and for change. We're currently working with some people in Dubai as well as in the UK, and we're hoping to have those up by the end of the year.
That's amazing. So a big part of what I hear you saying is that it's not just this AI data-driven, you know, here's your information, good luck, go with Rad. Here is a community. Here's a physical location. Here are experts that can help guide you. Here are, you know, additional diagnostics or additional tests that help to further your understanding of yourself and then planning on top of that. And we're constantly refining that and honing it and making it better, because science and biohacking is really moving at the speed of light right now.
Oh, yeah.
So you can't even just keep up anymore. You have to be at the forefront, at the leadership, driving that change and that transformation. So, you know how many times I've asked why, or is this a good drug for me? How is this going to impact me long term? These doctors look at me, well, your questions are not going to get in the way of my 40-year career and all of my expertise. And, you know, Dr. Krista, you're putting your hand on your heart because it's true. There's so much ego that's out there. There's a lot of ego in this biohacking space, which is brand new. You know, it's only been around for a decade, if not less. And there's already so much ego that's out there. So that's a really important, not just to be a self-advocate, but also from the practitioner side, from the scientist side, you know, you've taken an oath to do no harm. So don't do harm by making people feel stupid or feel bad for asking those questions of why.
You put yourself in a space where you have to become your own advocate. You have to be the one asking the why. And I think it's really, really harmful and dangerous when a doctor says, shh, I know better, stop asking these questions.
Right?
Because you know that you're not getting the answers. And so you're the one that kind of has to soldier through all of that. Right. So I think continually asking the why is really important, as well as on the patient side, being humble to hear the answer, because sometimes we don't always like the answer, right? It's sometimes if you've already decided what you want, hearing something opposite isn't always great. But I think humility on both sides and collaboration on both sides, we're not going to find a more powerful medicine.
It's so true. You have to be the quarterback, but not the quarterback, the running back, the tight end, that defensive line. You know, find your tribe of people, your practitioners, your friends,
surround technology, right? AI is part of this. We can't deny that. Right. AI is part of your team, right? That's what enables a lot of our genetics. That's what enables the liquid biopsies of the world, right? That came along because we had computing power. So how beautiful, how divine that we have such teams that include powerful, strong brains and hearts alongside this crazy fun little silicone machine that is able to compute all this incredible information.
And that's going to be our next podcast, is talking about AI and health, because that's a multi-hour conversation.
Yes.
It's so unknown for so many people. It's very scary for a lot of people who have lived most of their life without it. Yeah. And there's a lot of blind faith on both sides, on the practitioner side, on the AI side. And there needs to be a lot more integration, in my perspective, a lot more integration. But we'll put a pin for another time. I am so grateful for both of you joining me today. This has been the beginning conversation of something that I know is going to transform and help millions of people, if not billions of people, optimize their health over the course of several decades. You understand your why, you're living your purpose every single day. And I couldn't be more grateful to both of you for not only sharing all of this with me today on the Optimize We podcast, but also sharing your time, energy, effort, and life with the world. So thank you.
It was our pleasure. Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And if people want to follow you, they can check out the DNA company.
Absolutely.
Anything else you want to tell people?
No, we're on all of the app things. I'm just kidding. It's on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, all of those things. So they can follow us on there. There is one important thing to know. I do swear. Okay. I remember that whole I was born in Scotland thing. So there's times that comes out. So don't be shocked at anything that you hear come out of my mouth.
And I love it. I have a swear jar, and that swear jar is going to get me to a very hot beach, and I'm going to be very happy about it.
Well, I'm most excited about continuing this conversation, my two new beautiful friends in this amazing emerging industry of biohacking and longevity. Curse away, Tracy. I'm I'm a New Yorker, so
right?
I'm not only you to
totally do this. We got this. That's awesome. Lindsay, thank you so much. Thank you for the time. This has been fun.
It's been very fun. Thank you, ladies.
I've seen you.
This edition of the Optimize We podcast is brought to you by the Biohacking Index. Visit biohackingindex.com for ratings and reviews of your favorite wellness solutions and wellness providers.